This is Gary Hevitt, and we are farming on Mars. That'd be fun.
Hey guys, this week's episode is a conversation with Gary Hevitt, who's a recently retired farmer from the Idaloo area. We talked about how he started using cover crops on his fields and switching to no-till, his thoughts on the future of cotton farming on the South Plains, and the peaks and valleys of his farming career. So let's go ahead and jump into this week's episode.
My name is Gary Hevitt, and I farm in the, or I did farm up until I retired, in the Idaloo community, kind of between Idaloo and Lorenzo, north and south.
And how did you get started farming?
I grew up on a farm and always wanted to farm. So I went to college, went to Abilene Christian, met my wife there, and we got married and came back and started farming in 1970 was our first crop. And I just always wanted to farm, so it was in my blood.
Do you remember how your first year farming went?
Yeah, we farmed. We had 3 years that we got to farm under the farm program. You had a set aside that was kind of designed to keep the supply and demand in check. And actually, it was pretty good. I mean, the prices were good and everything was good and worked real good. And it like I said, of course, it was just real stable. You kind of knew what you were going to get. If you produced a crop, it was going to work.
What were the good years in your farming career?
Well, 1973 was a really good year. In a way, we paid for it later, but 1973 was a really good year. We hit, the prices were good, extremely good. And we had a good year in 1980 was good. It was a dry year, but ours was irrigated, and we did real well in 80. 97 was a good year, and 2010 was really good. 2016 was a really good year for us. So you kind of get one every 10 years, kind of.
What was the hardest period in your farming career where you had to transition to something new, like a piece of equipment or technology or something like that? Was there anything that was kind of hard to switch over to?
Well, yeah, probably equipment and technology was going no-till. That was kind of hard because we've always plowed, enlisted, and did everything, and trying to make that transition of, okay, is that cover crop using all the moisture? And so, yeah, you're protecting the soil and whatever, but you're giving up yield to do it. And it was just kind of a difficult time. We just kind of trial and error.
When did you start doing that?
Well, we started doing that probably 6 years ago. It was like 2000, after it was 2012 was the first year we kind of started doing that. And like I say, we kind of transitioned into it, figured out what would work and what wouldn't. Mm.
So what got you interested in no-till?
Well, the one thing, not running a sandbag, not seeing the grunt land below and having to go, okay, it rained a half inch, we got to be there in 30 minutes or this sand deal is going to blow away. So that part of it was nice. And there is a yield advantage. You do have some cost involved, extra chemical and that kind of thing, but there is a yield advantage, mm-hmm. and it sure is a lot easier with to not have to worry about the sand. And then that, if your cover's big enough, it protects it from our West Texas winds and And even though the sand doesn't blow on it, it's still protecting it from the wind, maybe a little hail protection. There's other advantages there. I think you're building up organic matter in your ground, which is a good thing.
A lot of the powder farmers, where they list it up every year and run a rod weeder. It's like a lot before you even plant. Why do you think a lot of farmers still do that? It seems like to me.
Yeah, well, farmers are going to stick with what works. I know some farmers, they plow, they run a chisel down it or a ripper, they list, they rod weed, they do that. They make great crops. Really good farmers. So it's kind of hard to, it's kind of hard to, I know one farmer in particular, he said makes 3.5-4 bales acre every year. And so it's like, okay, so what's he, why are you going to try to tell him what to do, But, and I guess if you find that niche that works for you, and I think people are scared of like cover crops taking the moisture, and especially in limited water and dry land, it's kind of a transition period there. Mm-hmm. And it takes that soil a while. The first year you do that, you're not getting the benefit of the cover crop. You have to kind of figure out what works, and probably some farms it'll work better than others. Yeah. Depends on your soil type and situ, how much rainfall and kind of what, it's just a transition period. And sometimes if it didn't broke, don't fix it.
So you said 2012 was your first year with a cover crop?
Yes.
Is that right? What did y'all start out with that first year, and how did you make that transition in your mentality to just go ahead and do it?
Yeah, well, of course, I've been to Seminole and Seagraves over there. I've got a friend over there, and they would plant cover crops. They were kind of the first ones started around here in that blow sand they've got. And, man, they didn't make cotton over there until they started doing the cover. And, of course, they would drill it in and let it get huge. And our first year we did the cover, we actually took a tie planter unit and planted one row of wheat in the bottom of the middles and tried to get it big enough. And it worked out real good. It got big and protected it. And it was kind of different, not plowing. You had to spray more, but like I said, Roundup worked and that kind of thing. But then we got to planting two rows, and then we kind of figured out, well, if you're not going to plow and do this, why are we even listing or doing anything? Just do it flat and go on. So
is there anything that you've learned from that, or any mistakes that maybe other farmers could learn from that you figured out trying to transition to that?
Well, yeah, I guess the only what we've, the thing we've kind of saw is, the instant you get that cotton edge, you need to get it planted because it's not going to grow. You start planting in December and January, it's cold and the days are short, and it doesn't matter if it's wet or not, it's not going to grow. And it's hard to get it big enough. And you want to let it get big, but the ideal situation is to get it killed before, so it has time to be really dead when you're planting. And that way, and then if you do get another rain, you get to store that rain instead of the cover crop getting it.
Yeah.
So the secret is early. It's get it in early and kill it early.
Makes sense. Do you mainly farm north of the highway or south?
Both.
Both.
Kind of all north and south. Yeah. It's about the same.
And I forgot to ask, what year did you start farming?
1970 was my first crop.
How did your family get out here?
Well, the Evetts came from Georgia, and actually they moved from Georgia to Dublin and De Leon, down there by Stephenville, and then they moved to Knox County, actually north of Benjamin, and then they moved from there to the Plains in 1907. So we've been here since 1907.
Whenever Roundup came out, was that, what did you think about it whenever it first came out, and what did the farmers around here think? Were they wary about it, or were they like, yeah, that's the way to go?
Yeah, well, oh yeah, yeah, I mean, I think everybody was excited until you priced it. It was it came in little gallon jugs, and it was like $120 a gallon. And you, and it, of course, it'd kill cotton, you know, so you had to be real careful, and the little spot sprayer started and all that. I mean, it was a great chemical, you know, and, but it was real expensive.
Yeah.
And a lot of labor, because you had to spot spray it. You couldn't spray over the top. And so, it, I mean, but it was a great chemical while it lasted.
So y'all were pretty excited whenever Roundup Ready cotton came out?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Roundup Ready cotton changed everything. I mean, it did. It, that's the only reason you could farm on the scale that we farmed, was because there's no way you could have done it all conventional and trying to plow and hoe and do all that. There's just no way you could get over it all.
Right.
So that, so it, it, it did, it changed things, you know, and we really got spoiled because it worked.
What year did you really start noticing in your own fields resistance?
Oh gosh, it was probably, it was probably, probably about 4 or 5 years ago. Well, our land, our ground was pretty clean, and but yeah, we started, I started seeing it on neighbors and in the bar ditches sometimes, you know, where you didn't, you didn't, you know, you kind of got drift on it and it didn't kill it, and we knew it was coming, but it just, we were lucky for a while, but it's there.
So where do you think farmers are going to go from here, especially younger farmers starting out? Do you think dicamba is going to last, or what do you think the next 5 years are going to look like?
Well, no, I don't think dicamba's going to last. There, I remember we were at a conference, and Dr. Dautre said when Roundup came out, there wasn't anything known resistant to it. And we used it for 30 years or so before resistance showed up. And he said, now dicamba's coming out, and there's already 32 known species resistant to dicamba. And what we've kind of seen, especially last year, we've saw careless weeds that the dicamba had injured them, curled them up, it lay them down, but they're not dead. And it's just a matter of time till you're going to see dicamba-resistant careless weeds. That's just, that's coming.
When you first started, what was your weed management plan? What all did you have to do?
Oh gosh, when we first started farming, we would plant, and if it rained, man, you'd be there with the rotary hoe real quick to stop the sand, but also to try to kill the weeds when they came up. And we plowed with cultivator, and we would run knives and beat knives and little scratchers on top of the row and try to, you know, plow 2.5-3 miles an hour so you wouldn't cover the cotton up. And it was real intensive, you know. And but people didn't farm a lot of land back then because you couldn't get over it all. But, and then we hoed. You had to hoe a lot. And, you know, and Treflan came out. It worked really good. And it, you know, it's great, but seemed like now it doesn't do as much. I don't know. But it, you know, and one thing where people plowed and hoed and was real cognizant of not letting a weed go to seed, we didn't, it wasn't great weed pressure. Our probably the biggest problem was white weeds more than careless weeds. If you know, white, the purple nightshade was the problem. And you know, it, I mean, we got by. It just wasn't the scale that we do now.
Was it harder transitioning from a good year to a bad year, or a bad year to a good year?
Oh, of course, it's
anyway, especially in terms of finances or knowing how to manage your money for the year and knowing when to buy equipment, right? Like that.
Seemed like it was always harder to go from a good year to a bad year because you didn't know how to plan for it. Mm-hmm. We can't control prices.
Right.
And so but you just kind of know when you hit those really good years, it's not going to stay that way. Mm-hmm. I mean, and so hopefully you put back enough to get you through the valleys that you hit. But, like I say, it's kind of hard either way you go. You know, like I say, we just can't control prices.
Yeah.
And it's hard to make plans like that because you don't really know what they're going to do.
Yeah, especially here.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, this is kind of a random question, but what did you call your farms?
Do you
have names for them, or just the landlord's name?
Yes, yeah, we were, we operated under Abbott Farms. Wife and I had a partnership it's real funny, some of the farms go back to I rented it from W.B. Criswell, but it was called the Williams Place, and it hadn't, the Williams hadn't owned it since the 20s,
you
know?
Yeah.
But everybody just called it the Williams Place, you know, so it's funny how names kind of stick to them, you know, but yeah, most of them, I called them by the landlord's name or Abbott Farms.
Do you think there's anything that younger farmers have forgotten about and maybe they could learn from going forward?
Well, I think, I don't know. I think maybe on the weed control that we're going to have to put more emphasis on pre-plant and instead of trying to kill weeds after they're up. I think we're going to have, I think the focus has got to be on prevention. It's got to be trying to keep them from coming up. And of course, cover crops help. You have less weeds with cover. But the answer is just going to be, I think it's going to be residuals is the answer. We're going to have to go back to some old tried and true things that we've always used. And You know, just like Treflan, there's not a resistant weed to it. It's been around forever, you know, and it's cheap. But you know, like I said, I think it's gonna come back to that. To some of the younger farmers, have farmed when it was. Basically, it's pretty good. The prices were decent. Prices were good. They haven't gone through the really tough times. And, you know, it's not always going to be good. That's just the way farming is. It's the way agriculture is. And so, I just hope they're prepared for that. Because they're gonna get one in a lifetime anyway. So, you know, you kind of got to prepare for the worst.
How do you mentally prepare yourself for those years?
Oh, gosh, it's hard. You just, farmers are just kind of a special breed. I mean, not anybody can farm. And you've got to want to. And it's just, you know, you have to understand that, and especially dryland farmers, you know, they really understand this. Boy, you hit that big, good crop, you know, you better stash some of it away because it's not going to about stay that way. And, you know, and once you get a little cushion in there, then you can kind of get through the valleys, and then there'll be a peak again that will work. But it's just hard, and sometimes you just have to do whatever you got to do to make it work, you know, and it'll work if you just figure out a way, you know. It's how bad do you want it? We were talking a while ago about the tough times. The 80s was terrible. I mean, we had good crops and everything worked, and gosh, the 80s came and interest rates 20% and this kind of thing, and prices cheap, and I mean, it was tough, and there were lots of farmers went out of business in the 80s. And you know, like I said, it just kind of came down to, you know, doing what you have to do, and just how bad do you want to do it. You know, we knew it'd get better sometime, but we kind of wondered when.
So how did you make it through?
Well,
what decisions did you make that you think helped you out?
Well, we just, you know, like I said, you just had to, I mean, we didn't buy equipment. We didn't spend anything. We made do with what we had and just tried to make crop as cheap as you could. But my philosophy all along has been, I can't control prices. And all the only thing I have a chance of controlling is yield. You know, of course, Mother Nature takes care of that sometimes. But, you know, I just can't do anything about the price, but I can do something about yield. So just tried to make all I could.
What do you think about stripper balers?
Oh, it's a great deal if you farm enough scale. Gosh, they're going to get so expensive. They're saying the newer one coming out next year going to be $1 million, $1.2 million. I don't know how you ever pay for one. I mean, by the time you get it paid for, it's wore out. You know, so sometimes it makes you wonder who you're working for. but it definitely, if you're farming to scale, man, it has eliminated all the labor problems. And you know, you can take two stripper balers with two operators, put them in a field and do the work of four strippers and five module builders and all this, and the labor that you can't find. And so it's a great tool, but it's one of those deals of farming to scale to make it work.
What do you think is the biggest challenge facing cotton farmers today?
Well, probably right now, it's probably the price. It's kind of what we were talking about, the stripper baler. The kind of what's happened in agriculture is the prices get cheaper because we're so global and competing worldwide. And as the price goes down, our margins get smaller. So to pay for equipment and pay for land, do things, so we try to farm more land to make that work. And so but your margin keeps getting smaller. And so you farm instead of 500 acres, you farm 1,000 acres, and instead of 1,000, it's 2,000, and it just keeps growing. And so, and there's going to reach a point to where, I don't know, there's probably going to reach a point where you're going to have to say, do I want to farm this many acres and risk this much money in that kind of a risk to make this small margin? Maybe we need to farm smarter instead of bigger.
What was the highlight of your farming career?
it's hard to single one thing out. I know there was some years that 2016, we had about 900 acres of cotton that averaged over 4 bales. So I was, that was, we had never done that before.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Are you mostly irrigated?
Mostly. Yeah, probably 75, 80% irrigated or limited irrigation.
So we were just talking about like scale of the farms. Where do you think that's going to go on the South Plains? Do you think it is going to just keep getting bigger and bigger?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I think definitely it's going to, I think it's going to just keep getting bigger. One thing, us older farmers are retiring and there's not a whole lot of younger farmers coming in. And so it's, the scale is going to just keep getting bigger, and then the price of equipment and you know, the price of land and everything, and the price, we're so global that the price is determined by the world and not a domestic market, and not everybody plays fair. And it's, you know, the prices are going to come and go, but it's just, it's going to come down to scale. It, just because of the fewer younger farmers, and then the just the cash that's going to, cash flow to make it work.
Did you market your own cotton?
We did. We used to sell our own cotton, and then we started, probably in the around 2006, I guess, something like that. We were we did ours through Allenburg. It was Allenburg Pool, ProCop Pool, and it was fun marketing your own. But gosh, you had to stay right on top of it, and it got to where you just didn't have time to do it all.
Yeah. So, are you excited about this new period in your life?
Yeah, I am. I am. It's going to be fun. Like I say, I've got my land rented out to a real good young farmer. He's aggressive. He's good. I've known him forever. And I'm looking forward to it. Looking forward to being with my grandkids more, going to watch baseball games in Frisco. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Like I said, it's just been a good deal. I've always wanted to farm, and it's a good life. It's different, you know. Not everybody can do it, and lots of stress. It's a good life. But you know, my kids. I've got two kids, a son and a daughter, and they grew up on the farm, and they enjoyed it extremely. Still, you know, even though my son lives in Frisco, you know, he's always talking about, you know, well, we did this on the farm, and that he learned this lesson from that. So it's been a good life.
And that's it for this week. Thank y'all so much for listening, and don't forget to check back again soon for another episode about the people of the plains. I don't know the answer.